Welcome to a very special edition of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast, because we are double header. It's a festival of sport for this particular edition. We're looking ahead to Royal Ascot, one of the summer highlights, and we're also going to look ahead to the Euros. And what a glittering cast we've assembled to look ahead to those two behemoths of summer sport. First off, it's going to be Royal Ascot, and I'm going to look ahead to this. My name is Patrick Connelly, with a certain Ruby Walsh and a certain Paddy Power. Gentlemen, Royal Ascot. This means the summer, the height of summer is upon us, and we've a full Royal Ascot and fans as well going, although it costs a few quid, doesn't it? How are you, Ruby?
I'm great, PK, yourself?
Ah, fantastic. Looking forward to a wonderful couple of weeks, very busy couple of weeks first. Paddy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, yeah. I'm all excited now. Ascot's kind of crept up, but that's what's kind of happened when you don't get out much. It kind of, the big ones creep up on you a little bit. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to this year. It's just, you know, just kind of starting to have a look at the some of the anti-post markets and stuff like that and getting a bit excited.
It's good when I give you the nudge on WhatsApp and I say, Paddy, I need you to look at these races. And then you go, oh yeah, that's coming up, isn't it? And it's a good way of reminding you that there's some proper horse racing coming up, isn't it? I only get you for the big meetings.
It's ever since I stopped, once I started using the diary on my phone rather than one of those desktop diaries that had always the race meetings in it.
Oh, they were good. Remember, we used to get the booklets with all the meetings and you used to have those. But remember those? Wow, that was a long time ago. Okay, lads, that's enough chat. Let's get some winners for Royal Ascot. And it kicks off as ever with the Queen Anne Stakes. This is the big mile race for four-year-olds and upwards. The straight mile, remember, different to the round course. Looking at the betting now, we've got one of the shortest price favourites of the festival potentially running in this race at the time of recording, 1-2 Palace Pier. Order of Australia, even 5-1. He turned into a miler out of nothing last year. Love, would she go here? 10-1. Armory, 12-1. Lopi Fernandez, 14s. Queen Pair, 14s. 16-1 and bigger the rest. Ruby, starting with you, will Palace Pier get beat? And if so, by what?
That's the thing, PK. What beats him? Bar himself. That's about it, really. I mean, it's impossible to see what horse can you pick to beat him. Look, I know Order of Australia won at the Breeders' Cup last year, but it was a 40-1 shot when it went and won there. One that beat Circus Maximus, Pierre Charles Boudot rode him, but it's just so hard to. He hasn't ran since he ran in Sha Tin in December. Love, I think, will run the Prince of Wales. Armory, he's a bit in and out, won Chester when he beat Sangarius, but needs to improve on that. That's not Palace Pier form. Queen Power, she's in a race, in a fillies race later in the week, and she's not even favoured for that. So how do you think she's going to win this? And you look down through them, I can't find a horse to beat him. And I think it's the lack of opposition that will make Palace Pier even probably a good price at 2-1 on.
Yeah, Paddy?
Yeah, looks a good thing, to be honest. I mean, he's ground versatile, pretty straightforward. I mean, the Revenant beat him on Champions Day in the QE2, wasn't it? But that was like soft ground, and Palace Pier came back after losing a shoe, which apparently isn't great. I suppose if you're running a race yourself and your shoe fell off, it wouldn't be great. But so, yeah, look, I kind of agree. I can't be saying get stuck in anti-post at 1-2, but probably is one to look. One of the great things about Ascot, much like Cheltenham, it really starts to bang. If you had a choice, you could only go one day, you'd probably go Tuesday, because you just got this bang, bang, bang at the very start of the day, and it's just amazing. So, like, it's okay to watch this race and get sucked into it, and then just kind of, you know, get excited about it. You know what I mean? You don't have to go and get stuck into a 1-2 shot the very first race of the week. It'd be very, very brave man who does that. So, I think Palace Pier, yeah, goes and wins, but I don't know if 1-2 is a good price. I think it'd probably scare away a few of those are double entered and are entering other races during the week as well, so they might get scared a bit of Palace Pier and could go off shorter, but you know, it's a 1-2 shot.
Yeah, I look, Frank's not here, but I'm pretty sure he would say that, look, he's priced conservatively at 1-2. I think it's fair to say. I think they don't think there's going to be much to beat him. He probably won't be much shorter on the day. It's Royal Ascot. It's the first race. You know, the bookies are going to want to get something in the book. So, look, we'll move on because he is 1-2. There's not much we can say about it. But we move on to the King's Stand. Now, Bartash a couple of years ago could be 1-2 for the King's Stand, but he's going to be a very backable price on this occasion. You'd assume 15-8. You've got the brilliant filly Glass Sippers at 7-2. Winter Power 5-1. Oxted 6-1, who's arguably been a little bit disappointing this season. Liberty Beach 8-1, 10-1 Extravagant Kid, and Kea Moro, and 12-1 a big of the rest. Paddy, this time we'll start with you. You're a man for a 5-furlong sprint at Royal Ascot. Batash 15-8. That's bigger than perhaps you might have thought a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, and there actually is a little bit of 9-4 around, I think, as well. Shop around. But Batash won this race, the King's Stand, won a well first time out last year. and we'll be keen to join some of the greats of the five furlong sprinting division who've won two King Stands, like Soul Power. It's just the one that springs to mind is Soul Power. But it's not easy to do, to be fair, because they are like sprints. You probably need a little bit of luck, or you don't need a little bit of luck, but a lot can go wrong in over five furlongs, you know, because it happens very, very quickly. But last season was as straightforward as you get for a horse like Batash, who was a bit of a head case back in the day. And just turned up three times, won three times, handily each time. So I think it looks like a good price, to be honest. Wow. I think it could go. It was even odds on last year.
I think it was odds on winning last year. Yeah,
it might have been 8-10 to 11 or something. So I think I think it'd be shorter than 2-1 anyway. Definitely.
Okay, Ruby. It's not the kind of price a punter wants to be back in Anti Post. But if Paddy Power is tipping up a 15-8 Anti Post, it must have a good chance.
Yeah, it was 5-6 last year. Obviously at the. Was his first run of the season, was pretty much Everton's first run of the season, I think, by then. And he will be very hard to beat. Obviously, his display at Goodwood was breathtaking. When we last saw, and I ran in York after that, obviously he won at Goodwood in July and in York in August when he won the Dante. But I'm going to go against him for value, and I'm going to go with Extravagant Kid. Won well in Maidan over six furlongs, but he has a lot of decent enough form in America over five round the bend. I think the stiff five in Ascot will suit him. He won over 5.5 at Keeneland. Likes to come from off the pace. I think Batash will suit him. Can even be a bit times, be a little keen in six furlong races. I think Batash going hard over five will suit Extravagant Kid of Brendan Walsh's, obviously an American horse. I don't see what else Ryan Moore will ride in the race. I know Doreen Tabor does own Keep Busy. Maybe he'd have to ride that, but he won on Extravagant Kid at Maidan. It'd be great to see Ryan Moore back on him. I just think at 10-1, he's going to be coming home. Ascot to stay in five, even though it's very fast, you have to stay. I think that'll suit him. Look, he's an 8-year-old. He's not exactly unexposed, but I just think he's been in good form of late, and I think at 10-1 he represents a bit of value.
He's far from a kid at this stage, you're right, but Extravagant Kid 10-1 for Ruby, Batash for Paddy in the 5-furlong King Stand. Very quickly, we move on to the third Group 1 on day 1 at Royal Ascot. It's the St. James's Palace, as Paddy rightly said. They really do start with a bang. Let's look at the betting at the time of recording. Poetic Flair, 3-1 favourite, 7-2 Mostadaf, Battleground. What's happened to him? 6-1. St. Mark's Basilica, will he go here after his brilliant performance in the Prix de Jockey Club? 6-1. Lucky Vegas, 7s. Highland Avenue, also 7s. Chindit, 8-1, as is Wembley. 10-1 Thunder Moon, and 12-1 for the likes of One Ruler, Labarossa, 14s, and Van Gogh, 16-1. Okay, Ruby, you go first. The 3-year-old Milers, Poetic Flair, 3-1. I suppose a Guineas winner at 3-1. A lot of people go, great, but he was Guineas winner by a cigarette paper, wasn't he?
Yeah, Beatmaster was seized by a short head. Then went to France, was 6 to St. Mark's Basilica, and was 2nd to McSweeney at the Curragh. He's a very good horse, but he's had 3 quick runs in Group 1 races. And you think there has to be something there that's a little fresher, that could be a bit of value. And I think it's Chindit. Thought ran really well in the 2000 Guineas for Richard Hannan. Pat Dobbs rode him, usually rides him. I think he was drawn on the wrong side in the Guineas. He was stand side on the Rolly Mile. The first three home were all on the far side. And I thought he ran reasonably well. Finished 5th. He's 8-1. I think each way, I'd be going for Chindit for a bit of value at the minute.
Interesting. All right, Chindit, a bit of each way value. Paddy?
Yeah, looking for a bit of value as well, but and very similar price, but 7-1. Lucky Vega. Has only actually won twice, but one of them was the Keenlands, which is Group 1, but was just beaten in the Guineas by Poetic Flair. Like nothing between that day, like you said, was 3rd, I think, but like there was nothing between them anyway. And then was kind of well beat, I guess, in the Irish Guineas when it was 4th that day, but that the ground is pretty soft. So I'm pretty sure that the better ground will bring out a better performance than we saw on the Irish Guineas, but I do think he could easily turn around with Poetic. I put it like this, I'd be willing to take more than double the odds of Poetic Flair from to turn that form around anyway. Battleground, you said, at one of the meeting last year, but it was soft last year, don't forget, when Royal Ascot and Battleground won. I don't think it's going to be soft this year. Mustahadaf, no idea how good it's going to be. It's got to be probably pretty good, but on the form book so far, you don't know how good it's going to be, and it'd be a few non-runners in there as well, so I would absolutely respect Ruby's choice, Chindit. I think I might have backed that in the Guineas. And Lucky Vegas, two of them maybe against the field, yeah.
I assume Jim Bulger's an avid listener of the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. I mean, he would have to be, wouldn't he? And he's going to come after you, lads. Two huge doubters in Poetic Flair. And you don't want Jim Bulger after you. No, yeah, no you don't.
Right.
Okay, that is day one covered.
He's very worried about me and Paddy. It says,
he might even take the horse out of the race now that we've not tipped it up, I'd say, you know.
You never know, Jim. Very good feature, actually, on ITV, to be fair. Fran Berry went down to interview him. He's always good value, that's for sure. You'll get a quote, at least, when you go to interview Jim Bulger. All right, that's day one covered, lads. We're rattling through the group ones. Day two at Royal Ascot features one of the marquee events. It's the kind of the global champion event, distance of 10 furlongs, one mile, two furlongs. The Prince of Wales Stakes for older horses. And hopefully we get a belter again this year. Let's look at the prices at the time of recording. Pause for effect, aka while I get the prices up. Lord North is your 7-4 favourite. 9-4 Love. Will she go here? We still haven't seen her. 3-1 Armory. 8-1 Adabe. We know loves it, but needs rain. Japan 10-1, as is Audaria. What a performance in the Breeders' Cup from her. 16-1 My Oberon. 20-1 Mogul. Sangarius. And 33-1 and bigger the rest. Paddy, you are first up for the Prince of Wales.
Yeah. I don't think Love's going to run here. I think Lord North's going to be hard to beat. Like, was very impressive last year, but I'm going to go with Armory. I know Ruby's like stuck the knife into Armory there a couple of minutes ago, but I think I was, for the Queen Anne. Yeah. But I just think Armory was quite eye-catching maybe in the Huxley Stakes at Chester. And that form's obviously not good enough, but that could be a stepping stone to a big performance here. And I'd be just willing to take on Lord North. I think Armory might be a little bit better than we've seen so far.
Have you asked the lads? Why do you think Love's not running here?
I don't know, I'm just only guessing. Okay. Because I think, like, on the form book, Armory's probably quite short in the betting. It's not a 3-1, considering Love's 9-4.
Hmm.
Like, you would have thought Love would be a better horse than Armory on what we've seen. So I think, and Love might step up and trip a bit, I don't know, I'm guessing.
Where is the Love, is the question we're all asking.
I think she'll run here.
Oh, okay.
I think she was going to step up and trip. We would have saw her last weekend at the Coronation Cup, where they ran Japan and Mogul. The two brothers, I didn't fancy either. I think we even tipped Pile Driver on the podcast last week.
PK. You did?
Yeah. I think Love would have gone there if they wanted to start her over 12 furlongs. I think she'll come here, 10 furlongs. If she doesn't come here, it's obviously the Pretty Polly Derby weekend in the Curragh, but I think she can take in both. And I thought that would have been the plan. Now, having said that, with Ballshy Ballet disappointed in Epsom, it doesn't leave them maybe with an Eclipse horse, unless they bring St. Mark's Basilica back to the Eclipse. Maybe that's what they'll do with him. For the Eclipse, I think Love will go here and they'll slip St. Mark's Basilica into the Eclipse, but I go for her here. I think 9-4 is a great price, anti-postal butter.
No love for Lord North, lads? Is he just a group one winner that doesn't seem to
he's a good horse.
Excite or something?
He's a good horse. He won the Champion Stakes last year when he beat a Dave, didn't he? Won this race last year when he beat a Dave as well, but 3 3/4 of a length. Look, he's a very good horse. Was a fan of him. But I think she's different. I think she's very, very good. I'd be a love fan.
I mean, Paddy, if she does run here, and I know you said she probably won't, or you think she won't, sorry. I mean, it's 9-4, she's going to be fab if she runs, right?
Yeah, most likely. Most likely. Yeah, but Lord North was impressive in the race last year, but again, wasn't favoured or, like, you know, was like, I mean, I think it was 5 or 6-1, or, you know, it certainly wasn't a short price favourite or anything. So, it was, I think you said it right, Lord North hasn't been a sexy horse at all, even though he's got some top class form in the book. He just hasn't been one that's caught the imagination. But yeah, I would expect Love to go off favourite should you turn up on the day. Yeah.
Okay, we'll keep an eye out for the market. Can often give us clues in those races. That is the Prince of Wales Stakes, a very, very good race. Some call this, though, the feature of Royal Ascot is the Ascot Gold Cup. It certainly is one of the most unique group ones, a 2.5 mile trip, the Ascot Bumper. Stradivarius, what an animal this fella is. 5-4 favourite for the Ascot Gold Cup. 5-1 Subjectivist, 8-1 Trushan, 10-1 Tiger Moth and Spanish Mission, 12-1 Santiago, Princess Zoe. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if she can get back to the form she showed on very soft ground last year. Search for Song 14s with Emperor of the Sun. Ruby, this is a race that Stratum, I see, is still priced, so Willie Mullins potentially will have a hand in it. Is that the plan?
Yeah, he probably could run PK, but your wildest dreams, could he be fourth? Possibly.
Yeah.
Would that be an unbelievable run for him if he could be fourth? I think Stradivarius is an amazing horse, but he's a 7-year-old colt. Hard horses to train. John Gosden and Teddy Gosden have done a terrific job with him. You could argue, was he gone off the boil a little last year? They dropped him back in trip, got outpaced behind Anthony Van Dyke in a large trial, then ran in the Arcs only 7 to Sawtash went back up in Trip on a Champions Day. Ground was too soft for him at Ascot. He was disappointed behind Trushan. Came back with a good win when he beat Ocean Wind and Ascot at the end of April, which was a really good run. Beating AF Road was third, but is that anything he hasn't done before? I don't think so. And I think he could be vulnerable. What's he vulnerable to is the next question. And I think it'll be one of the O'Brien horses, be that it's Tiger Moth or Santiago. I was always hoping Anthony Van Dyke would go this trip when he was in training. He never did. I hope they give either Santiago or Tiger Moth a go. I am a Tiger Moth fan. I know he was second off a featherweight in the Melbourne Cup as a three-year-old. He only had 8'4" and he's back. He was second to Twilight Payment. But he was second to Santiago in the Irish Derby, then won in Leopardstown. I think he's a fair horse. Santiago himself, yeah, he was what? Won at the Royal Meeting last year over a mile and six, didn't he? Beat Berkshire.
Yeah, what used to be the Queen's Vase or one of those races.
I'm going to go with Santiago. Each way, a bit of value, 12-1. I mean, you look through the race to even find which pick one to be second to Stradivarius. And I think, Santiago will do me every day.
Jamie Heffernan reported after Tiger Moth's disappointing run at the Curragh that the horse gurgled one furlong out till past the pull-up area. What does that mean, Ruby?
It's the wind.
Was he on the beer?
Soft palate. The palate gets displaced, and then with the wind, inhale, exhale, it rattles around their palate. When horses get tired, that's usually what happens. Some horses, when the palate is slightly overgrown, then it starts to flap in the wind, which means they don't get as much oxygen into their lungs as they require, and they slow down.
Is that what a wind up does? Then just
pare a piece of that off. But you have there, which means taking quite a bit of it away. But would that bother me? No, first run since last November, probably fitness, soft ground. He'd get over that, put a tongue tie on him to keep his tongue out of the way as best you can, to keep as much air getting in as possible. But I'll go with Santiago. I still think he could be the one. Tiger Moth, to get quicker ground with the run under his belt, he should surely have improved a good bit for that.
Paddy, your thoughts on the Gold Cup?
It's a kind of similar kind of train of thought as Ruby. Think Stradivarius most likely can't be improving. So it's probably going down. It's been beating up the same horses year in, year out. Now, it does seem there's a load of four-year-olds in there. So there are potential up-and-comers to be the next kid on the block, you know. And the one I'm going to take a chance with is Emperor of the Sun. It's a decent price and was very impressive in a listed race at Leopardstown. That was a mile and six, so there's obviously a massive step up and trip, and I'm just going to take it a chance or taking a chance that the step up and trip is going to bring out a lot more improvement, and just looks one I wouldn't have the back form now that like Santiago might have or Tiger Moth even, but at the same time at a big price sometimes these horses can grow a leg when they just find that marathon trip for the first time.
Yeah, that's fair. You said it there, Ruby, that Stradivarius, 7-year-old colt, difficult to train. I'm assuming because he's got his mind on very different things now at this stage. He's looking at fillies and mares and going, that's my job now.
But as they get older, the amount of testosterone they would have in them, they'd be carrying a lot more weight, heavier. They'd have to do more mileage to even get them fitter. Just get difficult to train. And he did look cold just a couple of occasions last year.
He did, didn't he?
Got quite sweaty and... it just doesn't get any easier that's why you see so few of them racing at that age. I just think to keep his mind on the job should be getting harder, will be getting harder, there's no doubt about that. But even the level of work and the amount of work he's taken, and then you keep upping the workload, you still have to keep their mind sweet enough to accept that and be wanting to race, and that's why it becomes such a difficult job to train them. You got to balance that between keeping their mind right and getting enough physical activity into them. It's just not straightforward.
It's not straightforward for humans, let alone horses. I mean, if you were really, really sly, would you not just enter a 4-year-old filly in the race and make sure it's one race card number up from Stradivarius, and there you go. Stick that one in front of Stradi. That'll make sure he's got his mind not in the game, and lovely jubbly. That'll do it.
Wait, PK, how exactly would you do that now?
Well, you enter the filly in the race.
If he'd be getting an allowance, she would automatically be below him on the race card, no matter what she did, because she'd have less weight than him.
Beck, yeah. Well, Kat, you can put a message into the stewards to say has to parade first or last or something like that.
Has to parade in front of Stradivarius.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's definitely something he'd want. I think there's only two mares left in the
exact
race.
Exact opposite you'd want because
sometimes you shouldn't think out loud.
As soon as you put that in his mind, put it back in the stable.
All right, okay. Well, I'm just a very cynical man. I was looking for him to win a race. I mean, anyway, Stradivarius is fab, but a couple against the big favorite there, Stradivarius, in the shape of Emperor of the Sun for Paddy, whilst Ruby Gun for Santiago. So it could be a good race for Coolmore, as it has been down the past. Right, let's move on to Friday. A couple of races beginning with C we're going to look at on Friday as we rattle through the week. The Commonwealth Cup, a relatively new race. It's been there a few years now. It's the big sprint for three-year-olds. Let's get the prices up. Paul's perfect. 4-1 favourite Campanelle. Obviously, she was very fast as a two-year-old from that Wes Ward barn. 9-2 Sueza, 7-1 Supremacy and Dragon Symbol. It's 10-1 Diligent Harry, 12-1 A Case of You, Mechmento, and 14-1 and Bigger the Rest. Ruby, you go first, the Commonwealth Cup.
Yeah, look, a lot will depend on which Campanelle turns up. And Wesley Ward obviously has a great record at Royal Ascot, so that shouldn't be too big an issue. It's outside of that, then I think A Case of You would look to be the shortest of the Irish horses in the betting. I think A Case of You won soft ground, won at Nace with a cut in the ground. I know it won on standard at Dundalk and a big Logo Hunter, but definitely handled slow ground and Nace quite well. And also on the Curragh last October and a big Lipizzan or so, you'd have to have slight concern about the ground for A Case of You. I was really hoping Thunder Moon would be in here. Wasn't entered. I thought the Commonwealth Cup would really suit Thunder Moon, so that has kind of slightly thrown me. But I think maybe one that had a really good two-year-old form last year, and I think going back in trip would suit, is Miss Anne Millett at Ken Condon's. I thought she was pretty decent filly last year, beat Frenetic over 5 furlongs in Nace, beat Sacred at York over 6, was second Alcohol Free, third Anne Purlett in the Breeders' Cup, was a bit unlucky, disappointed in the Irish Guineas behind Empress Josephine. That was on slow ground, first try at a mile. I think if she was dropped back to the Commonwealth Cup at 20-1, I think she'd be worth a shout.
Okay, watch out for Miss Amulet. Very nice price, the Commonwealth. Paddy?
Yeah, funny. I didn't even consider Miss Amulet, but yeah, that's I'm quite a fan of her. But Supremacy is the one I've got. I'm just choosing to forgive his disappointing prep for this one. I think encouragingly or reassuringly, it was way too bad to actually be a true running or a true reflection of the horse's ability in a Group 3, finished last 8th of 8, and that's obviously not good enough. But if you take that away and put a big red line through that or pretend it never happened, which I'm choosing to do, Supremacy would be, you know, maybe not favourite for this, but certainly be vying for favouritism, because this was always the race it had been earmarked for. So I'm going to think that Clive Cox has erased that blip from the Supremacy form line, and he can just rediscover some of his better form.
Okay, a couple of nice prices there, Miss Amulet and Supremacy. One more race to look at on the Friday. It's the Coronation Stakes, this one obviously for the 1,000 guineas kind of generation, and no surprise, topping the market at the moment is the 1,000 guineas winner, Mother Earth, 3-1. Empress Josephine, wow, she was very impressive, flew home 7-2. Primo Baccio is 4-1 and has been well backed. Pretty Gorgeous, 8-1. Alcohol Free, also 8-1. 10-1 Snow Lantern and Potapova and Joan of Arc, and 12-1 for Saffron Beach, who ran okay in the Oaks, would imagine. Maybe she'll miss this race after running there. Okay, Ruby, you go first, Coronation.
Very easy to make a case for the favourite, Mother Earth. She was really good in the Guineas when she beat Saffron Beach. But was there any excuse for her in Longchamp? I don't think there was. I just think she ran into a better horse. Already you're thinking, wow, is that Guineas form a solid? Or will it prove to be that solid? The one worry I'd have for Pretty Gorgeous, I thought she looked like a filly that would improve considerably for the run on the Curragh. She looked like she needed the run, and that's the way she ran behind Empress Josephine. She does need a dig in the ground. And when you think back to her as a two-year-old, you think Pretty Gorgeous, you think Cher. They were always bouncing off each other, and the ground was quick, it was shale, the ground was slow, it was Pretty Gorgeous. Looking at the forecast, I think it's going to be reasonably dry for Ascot, PK. Maybe you're betting on that, and you can tell me more, but I just think Shale at a huge price. We haven't seen her since the 11th of April when she ran poor in Leopardstown behind Keeper of Time, but I just think back on good ground, Yard is starting to get go a little bit better than it was. Dunica's, they were slowly into stride, but they're just starting to come around, not having a massive amount of winners, but they're going closer. He had a winner that was disqualified in the stall, one that was second as well there early in the week. I just think his horses are coming into form. So I think Shale at 20-1, if the ground is going to be really quick. And look, if it starts lashing rain, then they want to be on Pretty Gorgeous.
Now, I think the one I've picked here is Michael Stout's Potapova.
Okay, that's interesting.
On the channel. It's the only entry that she has for the week. Excuse me. And just absolutely hosed up in two races so far. Obviously, those races weren't up to that much, but just as one of those horses that just could be absolutely anything. And I just think Michael Stout, you know, filly, 10-1. It's got to be tempting.
Very interesting. Yeah, unbeaten. Sheepley Park filly, 2 runs, 2 wins. 6 lengths and 8 lengths. She's won her 2 races so far.
Do you know what I mean? It's not bad.
Yeah, you've done a bit of research there. Potapova, I missed that one there. That is interesting because, as Ruby said, with Mother Earth getting beaten since winning the 1,000 guineas, I suppose is the argument that maybe they're not a brilliant crop and maybe we haven't actually seen the best of the 3-year-old fillies as of yet. Okay, right. That is basically Royal Ascot covered.
Jubilee, no?
Well, we can do the Diamond Jubilee, but when I sent you the running order, we didn't have it priced. So I wasn't sure if you'd done a research, but you obviously have you?
It is priced, yeah.
I know it is now, but when I sent it, it wasn't.
All right.
Give us the winner of the Diamond Jubilee.
I don't know about the winner. I just hope she comes here and doesn't run Tuesday in the King's Stand, and that's Sonela.
Okay.
I think she won six. She's Paddy Toomey. She won in the Curragh in her last start. She had a good run first time up, but she was third to Gustavus Weston Guineas weekend. She went back last week in the Curragh on the 2nd of June and beat Romantic Deposit by half a length over 6 furlongs. I think 6 suits her really well. She ran okay in Ascot at the back end of last year. Well, she was slightly disappointed behind Glen Shield, but I think the ground was too slow for her. I think quick ground, 6 furlongs. Paddy Toomey trains in the Mildler Stud Farm Colours. Sonela at 14-1.
Yeah, she's backed in from 20-1, hasn't she? Yeah, and she's hard. Well, she wouldn't go for the 5 furlong race. She surely looks
she's
like
entered,
she needs...
so you never know. And horses entered, yeah. Always that question mark. But I hope she comes here. And to be honest with you, there's no batash in this. This looks a slightly easier race.
Mm. Paddy, had you any thoughts? I know I didn't ask you to look at the Diamond Jubilee, but I'm sure you're well aware. King of the sprinters, as you know.
I would be, yeah, like Ruby said it there. I mean, it's probably not, like, I mean, there's Group 1 winners in here, but it's probably not... It doesn't look as difficult a race as the King's Stand for someone. I don't know why that is, but if like 14-1 Sonela, definitely be one you'd have on your short list. There's a few there that probably won't run here because they'll have run on Tuesday instead. Starman's 5-2 favourite just seems a bit short and that's probably an open race. So you'd be looking for something outside. So yeah, Sonela, why not? I'll just steal Ruby's tip as well.
Glen Shield is probably overpriced at 14-1 as well. That ran better than the finishing position suggests at the Curragh. It was a good winner last call at the back end. Likes to dig in the ground. I know that, but I think at 14-1, if there was a drop of rain at all, he won't be anywhere near that place.
Yeah, Holly Doyle last year, that was brilliant. Shame no crowds there, but there will be crowds this year. I assume neither of you are going.
I thought Glen Shield won on Champions Day last year, didn't
it? Oh, that was Champions Day, yeah, the same thing. Champions Day, Royal Ascot, they're the same now. Last year, Ruby, the calendar went out the window. So whatever, it was
it
just Ascot.
Did it, yeah.
It was amazing. I don't know how you miss it. It was all over the news, like, for God's sake. What I was going to ask you, Ruby, is Willie Mullins has a fairly decent record at Royal Ascot, particularly in those staying races, and there's a glut of them. Is there going to be a team sent over this year?
Yeah, there's a couple going. MC Muldoon, maybe.
Okay.
Horse that won yesterday.
The horse that won yesterday in the bumper?
Last in the stall, no.
Oh, Saldier.
Saldier, that's it.
Saldier, I'm here for a reason.
To 102, but that'll mean he'd have top weight in the Ascot Stakes, but he could go. Saldier, MC Muldoon, maybe Royal Illusion, Stratum, something around those lines.
Stratum in the Ascot Gold Cup. Yeah. Of those
in the Queen
three.
Alexander as well. I don't know, do any of them, are any of them ahead of the handicap? Not sure the RMC will do, maybe. Saldier, to be fair to him, bolted in yesterday off 99. He's gone to 102. He's probably a pretty classy individual.
And just to refresh our memory for those listening and aren't aware, the jumps handicapper in the UK takes a very different view to the Irish handicap, but the flat, they are pretty much the same, usually?
They are, yeah, they are pretty much the same. No, they are the same. They're the same on the flat, yeah.
Reciprocated, so yeah, it won't be a case of Saldier winning.
The flat horses in the UK aren't overrated, no.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Okay, is there anything, guys, when I asked you to look ahead to Royal Ascot that you thought, yes, I'm really looking forward to this horse running and I'm looking forward to this horse winning out of all the races you looked at? Paddy, you go first.
Out of all the races I looked at, I think kind of looking forward to see Palace Pier just to
really
continue being like, I think he's a really good horse, and like I think he's just keeps beating all in front of us, and sadly except for the last time the Revenant beat him, but I'm looking forward to him. I quite like him. And then what I like is the potential changing of the guard in the Gold Cup, which I know it's way too early to say that because Stradivarius still has to get beat, but I do think that it's getting to that stage, so we might see, and in that division there's so many four-year-olds coming up that there could be a few of them that really love to step up and trip on that, and that there could be a bit of a ding dong there, because the Ascot Gold Cup, I used to really enjoy the race when Yates was winning it. Stradivarius hasn't caught my imagination in the same way.
Okay.
And it's just it wouldn't be like my highlight of the week or anything. Just looking away, while some of the other ones, like I love the Tuesday, I love the Kingstand, obviously for obvious reasons, but I love the James's Palace and the Queen Anne and races like that. So I think James's Palace is really interesting too. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Excellent, Ruby. What are you looking forward to most?
It's more the race in PK than any one particular horse. I would say. As Paddy, I love going there on the Tuesday. Queen Anne, Coventry, James's Palace, Kingstand, Ascot Stakes. It was a new mile and six race there on the first day as well. But I just enjoy the race, and it comes one after the other. And yeah, and it's the adaptation when you look, and all of a sudden you spot Jesus Aidens are flying, or Michael Stouts are overrunning themselves, or somebody, John Gosden's.
And even like, say the Coventry, and you see the American horse or whatever, and it's like twice the size. The arse is about three arses wide, and you're going, jeez.
Did that fly the plane over? The rest of them coming in.
It swam over, and it got three of them on its back as well. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, look, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be cracking 5 days. Hopefully, we've unearthed a few winners. What we're going to do now is take a very, very, very short break. We'll be back. And we're going to look ahead to the Euros with our man Phil Thompson. Paddy, Ruby might stick around and give a few winners as well. Another big betting event this summer.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back. It's time to turn our attentions to the Euro 2021 Championship kicking off very, very shortly this weekend. And I'm delighted to say, sticking around our Ruby Walsh and Paddy Power, but joining are two men who are going to provide us with winners aplenty from either side of the Irish Sea. We have Phil Tomo Thompson. Tomo, how are you?
I'm very good, PK. Looking forward to this. Having a chat with the lads.
Oh, I am too.
Oh, been missing a bit of proper football.
Oh, proper football.
No, sorry, mate.
Proper football.
Absolutely. Those warm-up games were hopeless. So let's get on with it.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch any of them, Tomo. That's why I got you guys to join. And Jason Murphy, intrepid football trader, joins us. Jason, how are you?
Yeah, really good. I fully agree with Tomo. It's like having Guinness out of a can. You want to get the proper stuff. You want to get the points, and that's what's coming now.
And there has been a lot of Guinness drunk out of cans in this country in the last... straight out of the can as well. I had one on the pier in Dunleary a couple of months ago. Like, didn't even pour it into a glass, just straight out of a can. I'm not going to lie, lads. It was a new low. It was definitely, I think that's when you know COVID's really got to me, lads. I can't even pour it into a glass straight out. The widget kept getting in the way as well. Ugh, disgusting. Right. You're here to find us some Euros winners. And that's exactly what we're going to ask for you each first. I'm going to start with Tomo. Tomo, who wins Euro 2020?
Do you know what? I had a really good chat with Paddy Powell, with Paul Ince, Manu Petit, and it was wonderful. Manu Petit went for his dark horses, Hungary. Now, I can't understand how Hungary, when you've got France, Germany, and Portugal in the same group, but they are not mine. But Mike, I just think the timing of it is right for this Belgium side. I really do. They've been like the golden generation that England had. They've just not been able to get there. Now, I think because a few of them are aging, a couple of them might realise that this is the last chance. I think this is their side. They are in a decent side of the draw. So I think Belgium are going to be my winners.
Be a nice price too, Jason. What are your thoughts on the winners?
Yeah, so we've Belgium 13-2, and it's one of the better prices you'll get out there on them. Okay. Head of the betting is obviously France and England, bought 9-2. France to have the better 11, the better squad, the better manager. The only reason England are going off the same price is because of the home comforts at Wembley. And we've had a lot of debate in the office about how much home advantage. Yeah, I was nearly going to throw the chair out the window, but I just held back because of my home. It wouldn't benefit anyone. But we've agreed. And that's how we compile odds within the team. We come to an agreement on it. And we're quite happy with our prices that we have on those three. But personal favourites for me are Italy and Spain. We'd be under them, so there's better prices around on both. But they tick a lot of the things that you look for in an outright winner. They've got great depth in the squad, which you want after a long season of COVID. There's no superstars in either team, no egos. And if players have to come out, the quality that comes back in is just as good. Both really good international records in the last 12 to 18 months and both really strong managers that aren't afraid to make big calls. So I'd be very, very sweet on Italy and Spain. But if it was pushed, I'd go with Spain just to pip it.
Okay, so Spain for Jason. Paddy, before we get Ruby's defining vote, we've got basically three different teams mentioned so far. Shows you how open it is. Who are you on in the Euros?
Well, considering we started this podcast as a racing podcast, I'm going to use racing parlance. France won the World Cup on the bridle. Okay. Like, they really did. They schooled Belgium and they won the final, like, you know, without even taking the whip out. You know what I mean? So they're very, very good. They've got Benzema now in the squad, which it was the sex tape and all that kind of stuff, wasn't it? Well, he was ostracized for years.
But the bribery, was the bribery element.
Was it okay? But I'm assuming the fact that he's back in means that it's not going to, like, I mean, France and the Dutch basically over the years have had terrible squad troubles, haven't they, at tournaments? Yeah. But I presume that's not going to happen this time. So I'm taking on trust that that's not going to happen this time. And he's an improvement on Giroud, even though Giroud's been brilliant for France, but he's an improvement on Giroud.
Yeah.
So they got him now, they got Mbappe, they got Kante, they've got they've just got an amazing team. Oh, I know the group in theory is hard, but Germany are forgotten how to play football, haven't they? They don't really count anymore. So it's like, you know, it's like France and Portugal come through the group handy enough. And then
No, you wear the cliches, efficient, never forget the Germans.
You can never write off the Germans, but I'm writing them off this time. I'm writing off the Germans this time, right? And I just think France are just the best team.
Okay.
And for that simple reason, they're going to win.
I've asked three people. I've got Belgium, I've got Italy, I've got Spain, I've got France. Ruby, if you add another team here, we're fast going broke by backing five teams.
I was half tempted to tip Turkey each way. They have to get to the semi-final big price. But the one problem I have with Turkey is their first game is in Rome. It's 5.25 hours from Rome to where they're playing their next game in Baku on an airplane. And you've got that comes into the St. Petersburg and Seville in the group Sweden, Spain and all those are in. The transfer time between those stadiums is 5.25 hours as well. It's only an hour from Glasgow to London. It's only an hour from Budapest to Munich. But some of those teams are going to have 5.25 hour transfers in the middle in the days between their matches. That I think has to be a massive disadvantage. Turkey played their first game in Rome, and they're going to play five and a quarter hours back to back over their second two games. Now Italy have the luxury of playing their three group matches in Rome. England are obviously playing the three of them in London. Spain are playing their three in Seville. So yeah, that puts me off Turkey because of that transfer that Italy aren't going to have to make, England aren't going to make. France have one transfer, but it's only an hour. I mean, that's only the lap of luxury. We'd go an hour. That's no transfer.
Yeah.
That puts me off some of those teams. Italy are in that group with the big transfer, but their three games are in Rome. So that gives them a distinct advantage as well. So that's only a small thing that's nothing to do with football. That's nothing to do with human logistics that I'm throwing in there. And that gives Spain and Italy a huge advantage over other teams in their group.
If I can just say, Ruby's got a point, because don't forget the weather. You're playing football matches. It's going to be absolutely scorching hot, whatever you're playing in Europe. And then you've got the travel on top of that. It's going to be exhausting. Turkey have got a really decent side, but I just think they fall below that threshold of the top teams.
Yeah.
Just on that, lads, because it's perfect. Love lads that do the research and it's great information. And this is the first big tip for the show. The team to score the most goals in the tournament. We're 9-2 on Spain. There's 5-1 out there. Because of that travel, the teams that are playing in Seville in that heat, they're traveling a long way from a cold St. Petersburg. And Spain's last game in particular will be against Slovakia, who have one of the oldest squads in the tournament. So Spain to rack up a high number of goals in the group stages. They've scored 34 goals in their last 9 competitive home games. So Spain to be the team with the most goals, based on that great insight that the lads have given, at 5-1 that's available out there, is a great interest bet for the tournament.
And I was actually going with Spain to win the tournament. I didn't get around to that and all the bullshit I was going on about with travel and everything else, making excuses for everything else. I was going with Spain. And I agree with a lot of what Jason said. I think they have a manager that won't be afraid to drop a few lads as well if someone's not performing.
Okay, I did ask you, that's excellent research, and Ruby would know more about traveling that and how it affects the body than most, obviously, every Christmas, sorry, not Christmas Day, every Stephen's Day.
No, but an hour is nothing. That's either getting in your car, but yeah. Who goes 5 hours anywhere? I don't care what plane you're sitting on and what lungs you're going in.
Well, they're sleeping.
Going on their own planes. It's not, it's just even different time zones, hotels, hassle, mentally it gets to you. I think those teams are traveling have a disadvantage.
It's good knowledge, by the way, Ruby, because we at Liverpool, when I was with Gerard Houllier, anything over 4 hours, which obviously you were going sort of more and more east, we decided to go an extra day early for our European games just because of that. So for the travel, we made sure we had an extra night staying over there because we noticed and we had a look. A lot of the, I know we're sort of digressing here, but a lot of the Greek sides so often were coming west. And they never got good results traveling. So we looked at it and we said, right, we need to go a day earlier because it does drain you if you're going and you get there, what, at 6 o'clock the night before the match, you're playing 8 o'clock the next day. It's not a lot when you're at four and a half hour journey.
Didn't Messi used to be on Turkish Airlines ads? I mean, there's a bit of pressure on them now, Turkish Airlines, to make sure that these lads arrive like fresh and fresh and fancy feet. Well, I'm pretty sure it was Messi was on them. He used to be on those ads anyway. Anyway, right, look, lads, you've given us some great selections there. It looks like Spain is kind of the one that kind of stands out if we're to take one from the panel. I want a dark horse. I guess you've sort of maybe kind of given us Turkey as one there, Ruby, but albeit with a very big proviso. Tomo, give us and our listeners a team that are a decent price that you think might go far.
Well, I really think I had a look at this. You might not like it, you Irish lads, but mine is Denmark. They've only had two defeats in 26. They just seem to cane you every time they play.
Eriksen. Eriksen, he never scores.
But I do. I think you look at their group, they have got Belgium in it, but I do expect Denmark to go through. I'm looking at it. They're in a decent side of the group when they get through as coming runners up.
Yep.
So Denmark for me are my dark horses.
Okay, all right, don't mind. I thought you were going to put up England as your dark horse. I thought when you said
steady,
you guys might not like it.
Steady.
Jason, your thoughts on a team at a big price?
Yeah, what's the cutoff point for a dark horse?
It's a great question. I mean, it has to be double figure odds, I think. I don't know if Denmark are that, but I would say double figure odds.
Surely Denmark are.
That's fair enough. Yeah, okay. No, I had Denmark down as one. They were 66-1 in February, but the price has balled it since. They're 25-1 now, and the market has copped onto them. They have a real strong spine. Eriksen, Schmeichel, strong defensively. And, you know, if they get out of the group, they can do definitely what they did in 92. They can go all the way. Very unlucky in the World Cup. They were the team that went out on penalties against Croatia, who ended up going to the final. Mm. So Denmark is what I was going to put up, but I thought we need something at a bigger price. So I've gone Ukraine at 100-1.
Wow.
The reason being, there's a few teams that have benefited from the delay from last year, and Ukraine are one of those teams. Shevchenko, it's his first managerial job. He's in it a few years, but tactically, he would have learned a lot. They got some really bad beats back in autumn against Spain and France. He's had a look at it. He's figured it out, and they'll probably go with a 4-1-4-1 in the opener against the Netherlands, and got a good result using that formation against France in the World Cup qualifiers in March. They're a young, fresh squad as well, and a lot of these players have Champions League experience. You know, the Dynamo Kiev lads have played against Juventus and Barcelona in the Champions League this season, so you mightn't recognise a lot of the names, but at 100-1, I really fancy them. I'm against the Dutch, so therefore I think they're priced to come out of group. They're 9-2 to win the group, which I think is a great bet. But 100-1 each way is definitely a good, fun, interest bet for the rest of this tournament.
Very interesting. Okay, the Danes and the Ukrainians. Paddy, your dark horses.
I was going to say the Netherlands, but now maybe I won't. Because the Ukraine are 100-1, they must be useless. The two I had kind of like, outsiders kind of like, I'm not saying you should back them because I really couldn't see them winning it. Do you know what I mean? Or even getting to the final, because I think it's going to be amongst the top of the market. But Poland, I thought, might do okay. And I actually thought the Netherlands might do okay. But I'll happily take back my Netherlands to Jason completely destroying that. But will you go to me first the next time?
I will. I absolutely will.
Poland may be the sneaky answer. I can't remember why I picked them out, but I picked them out for some reason.
Lewandowski, maybe he's good. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I think he's all right. Ruby, go on, give us one, a dark horse.
I'm still going to go with the Turks way. They play that first game in Rome. They fly back to the heat of Turkey. They'll be able for it. Welsh and the Swiss, they both have to go to Baku. I think they'll struggle there. So they'll get out of the group. They're into knockout football then. They're 60-1. I'll have a chance of it.
All right. That's some nice prices there, lads. Look, loving that. Right, let's have a look at the top goal scorer market, often very much linked to who you fancy, because if you fancy to go far, the likelihood is you need a goal scorer to bring them there. Paddy. I'll go at you first, Paddy, seeing as you are... Sorry, Tomo. Just in case Paddy tips up someone brutal. 5-1 favourite is Harry Kane at the moment. I won't rattle through the prices. You can check him out on paddypair.com. Paddy, go on, give us top goal
score. I understand why this is a terrible tip, but I do think that the team are going to go and win the tournament, so we'll get plenty of game time. And I think it's Karim Benzema.
I think you have to.
As a big price. Like, I mean, I know their group is tight and they mightn't bang in loads of goals in the group, but if they do go all the way to the final, there's plenty of opportunity for them to score goals. Their attack is just sensational, isn't it, really? Like the creativity that France have, and they could probably bang in a couple very quickly if it starts going well for them. So I think Benzema could be key to France.
He's 12-1. And Jason, I know we're each way five places. Is that normal?
No, it's nearly the best in the industry. Plus, we have a top goal scorer offer. Yeah. So if you back a top goal scorer, the first one that you back will give you a free bet for every shot on target they have throughout the tournament. T's and C's apply, but that's another good reason if you're having a bet on the top goal scorer market to have a look with Paddy Power.
Wow. Jeez. Well done.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Okay, that is good. Phil, your thoughts on top goal scorer?
Oh, well, I've gone for Belgium to win the thing. So I do think they need to get sort of at least the semi-finals. You have that hope that they will, to actually rack up the goals. It's no more better than Romelu Lukaku. I just think he's been... I don't know whether you've seen the goal the other day. I don't know whether you've seen his turn. This guy's had a new lease of life. Is this the same guy who was at Manchester United? I just can't believe it. You look at him at Inter.
I actually forgot he played for them.
This guy at Inter, when you're seeing him, he is just loving his game at the moment. He's hot. He scored again the other day. Just look at him. He is looking fitter than I've ever seen him. He's looking hungrier. And I think that's important, because I think he lost that desire at Manchester United. And for me, he is going to be... He is my bet as the leading goal scorer.
All right, we've got votes so far for Lukaku, one for Benzema. Ruby, I'll give Jason the casting vote. So, Ruby, you're up next. Top goal scorer?
Not really suiting me, but I think he'll score all their goals, and it'll be enough to get him that gong. But I don't think they'll win the competition. It's probably Harry Kane.
Ruby Walsh. Disgrace. All right, Jason, your thoughts?
Yeah, delighted with what's been mentioned there. The front three in the betting is Kane, Lukaku and Mbappe. Kane won what was arguably the easiest goal in boot in history at the last World Cup with a lot of penalties. And that's the key angle when you're backing someone in this top goal scorer market who's on penalties. Since VAR has come in, the percentage of goals that are actually penalties has increased from about 7 or 8% up to 11, 12%, and possibly is going to hit 14% in this tournament. So known penalty takers is where you'll find angles and value in this market. So won't put anyone off Kane, but out of the three in the front of the betting, I prefer Lukaku just because he's more likely to get the opportunity with Belgium to go further in the tournament and bang in the goals. His international record's incredible. But the one tip I'm going to give you, I agree with Benzema as well. We underestimate him as odds compilers coming back into this French team. And we've seen him against Wales last week. Now, Wales were down to 10 men for most of the game. But the quality of chances that Benzema got in that game, he could have had 3 or 4 goals alone in that. He was the one position that could improve that French team. So he's 12-1 with us. There's 16-1 out there. It's just debatable who takes the penalties for the French team. And that's why it won't, go steaming in on Mbappe. It won't go steaming in on Benzema. If you knew who was taking penalties for France, that's who you back. But for me, I'm going to give you a big one. Following the team with Ukraine, he's a penalty taker as well. And it's Ruslan Malinovsky. Obviously, I'm not going to pronounce everyone on the Ukrainian team, but that one I just about got out. 200-1. back him each way. He's on penalties. He's 28 years of age. He's ready to peak in this tournament. He's a massive important player for them in qualifying. 3 goals and 3 assists. And he's had his breakout season with Atalanta this year. He's got 7 goals, 10 assists in just 19 appearances. A lot of them coming off the bench. But when Gomez left Atalanta to Sevilla in January, it was a big upset. They thought Atalanta would drop off, but they never missed him with Malinovsky stepping up to the plate. This guy, I think, this is his tournament. He could be taught about the same way you think about Figo in Euro 2000 or Totti in Euro 2000 or Poborski in Euro 96. Wow. He is one to watch. And at 200-1, with him being on penalties and Ukraine, I imagine, going to get 4 or 5 games in this tournament, I think that's a great fun bet to have a look at as well.
Malinovsky.
Yeah, Malenko is their top goal scorer, though, isn't he?
Yarmolenko is well known. He took the penalty the other night, but Malinovsky, based on the research that we've done, we reckon he's going to score them. Yarmolenko, he's only played about 300 minutes for West Ham this season. He's not fully fit, but the fact he's fit for this tournament, absolutely, he gets in that team. Yarmolenko is the main striker. So even if you go Yarmolenko or Malinovsky or Zinchenko, they're probably in the tree behind Yarmolenko. So none of them are the main striker. But again, if Malinovsky's on penalties, which is what I'm saying off my research, he is value at 200-1.
Before you guys joined the pod here, Jason and Phil, I asked Ruby and Paddy, I said, lads, you don't have to stick around, but you can if you want to give a bit of info. And Paddy said, yeah, I'm on TalkSport later, so I'll stick around so I can do a bit of research. I have no doubt that Paddy Power on that TalkSport show
is this Ukrainian guy. He plays for Atalanta.
It's going to be word for word. Okay,
I would have loved Paul Mason to try and get his mouth round all those names. Honestly, Jason
wouldn't have bothered. He would have given up.
Oh, he'd have said the big man up front or the quick lad.
The number
18.
Nine.
What's his name again, Jason?
Ruslan Malinovsky. Remember the name.
Good research, Jason.
Malinovsky.
Very good, very good. Okay, right, we're going to wrap up, lads. This weekend, we've got the first fixtures of Euro 2020, and I'm going to get your nap of the matches this weekend. I'll let you pick from any of the round one fixtures, but just for the listeners so they don't have to go searching, here are just a quick run through of some of the matches. Turkey-Italy, obviously, on Friday night, with Italy 1-2. Wales-Switzerland, Denmark-Finland, and Belgium-Russia are all on Saturday. You've got odds on favourites in Denmark and Belgium in those matches. England-Croatia, of course, on Sunday. England odds on at 4-6. Austria against North Macedonia. That's the big one on Sunday, folks. And Netherlands-Ukraine. Oh, Netherlands-Ukraine. What a fixture that is. Imagine Netherlands win, Paddy. You'd be absolutely gutted.
It's a nil.
yeah.
If they beat Ukraine. That's the weekend fixtures, lads, but I've given you any match from the first round. Tomo, where's your nap of the first round fixtures?
My nap, I was up for a bit more. You just put me off a little bit, but I'm sticking with it. I'm going for Denmark. They will be my nap for the weekend. I don't know what price they are, James, but...
They're 4-9 at the moment, but that's okay. We can throw them in with something else.
Absolutely.
We'll do a nice lacquer. Jason, your nap of the weekend?
For the first round, I'm going to give you Ukraine and the draw at 11-8. I'll be having 11-2 for them to win the game against the Dutch. Like, they're missing Van Dijk, and they're also missing Ronald Koeman, who's gone to the Nou Camp, and it's a very less than impressive Frank de Boer that's taken over. So they're the one team not to benefit from the postponement. So I'll give you that at 11-8, Ukraine in the draw. The one last other anti-post bet that I want to give anyone that's listening, name the finalist market. We have Spain and Italy at 22-1. There's bookmakers out there that have them at 40-1. And as Ruby alluded to, with the home advantage, both of those teams should be topping their groups. And if they do, they're on the opposite sides of the draw. So that's 40-1. I don't like to say lazy bookmaking. I think it's just a little bit of an oversight. 40-1, name the finalists, Italy and Spain.
No. I love when people say, I don't like to say this, but I'm going to say it. you've kind of a lay of the Netherlands almost as your nap of the weekend. And Paddy, your nap of the weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to change. It was going to be the Netherlands. It's going to be Ukraine now. I'm obviously going to back Ukraine because I clearly don't have a rashes about football. I would have thought that England should beat Croatia, yeah? I mean... Could the tournament get to England? I think England could beat Croatia. They're 4-6.
A
few odds on shots in there that you think will probably take home the bacon. Like Denmark should win. You think Italy should beat Turkey. Although that's probably not a done deal, Italy against Turkey. Turkey are 13-2 maybe. But I think I'll go a double England and Denmark and then maybe have a few quid in the Ukraine just to prove to myself that I know nothing about football.
And finally, Ruby, your best bet of the opening few fixtures.
But I mean, 4-9 shots over 90 minutes. It's bad enough back in a 4-9 shot in a 90-second race, let alone a 90-minute football match. I'm going to go for the draw, Turkey and Rome.
Oh.
Turkey and Italy, sorry, in Rome.
Yeah. Turkey versus Italy, a draw, which is currently 27-10. One of those funny football prices you keep throwing at us, Jason. I remember the days when we had normal prices on football, eh? Those are long gone. Okay, listen, gentlemen, that was brilliant. I really enjoyed that little preview to the Euros on the From the Horses Mate podcast. We will hopefully, I'll tell you what, we'll be back afterwards to see how the Netherlands and the Ukraine went. Tomo, thank you very much for joining us.
Really, lovely.
Thank you for your insight.
Tomo, we had Matt Chapman on the other day doing one. And all he kept doing was plugging Kazoo for the derby because he wants the free car. I get the feeling PK wants Turkish flights, isn't it?
Yeah.
Turkish Airlines just had an amazing there every 40 seconds. Give her another rattle there, PK. Turkish Airlines.
I tell you, it's a great airline, lads. You know, have you ever gone Turkish Airlines? It's really good. Like their service is second to none.
A few free tickets from Lionel Messi as well.
Exactly. It's like a hotel in the skies, lads. I mean, I tell you, get up there. Don't mind your Jennifer Aniston, whatever she... Is she Turkish Airlines still? I don't know. I can't remember. But anyway, listen, thank you very much, gentlemen. Paddy, thank you. Jason, thanks for joining the pod as well. We will be back on Friday, as per usual, looking ahead to the weekend's racing. Stay safe, stay well. Please do gamble responsibly. If you do feel that you need support, do check out paddypower.com. Responsible gambling. There are ways of support. But until the next time, folks, stay safe, stay well, stay lucky.